On today's episode of Hardwood Handicappers, we're diving into the first round of the NBA draft, which was a little bit chalkier than expected, but we did see some surprises. There were some teams that made some really strong moves. We'll dive into all of the winners of the night and some of my favorite fits of the first night of action of the NBA draft. And we're also going to do some housekeeping. Mike Anori hired by the Blazers. Trae Young re-signs with the Washington Wizards. Julius Randle traded to the Brooklyn Nets. We didn't talk about any of that stuff yet, so we will get into it on today's episode of the show.
Welcome to Hardwood Handicappers with Zach Cohen, right here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
I do want to start with the NBA draft. That was the main event of the week. Last night, all of the top prospects were in Brooklyn. We saw some, you know, major moves and some really nice steps forward for some of the, you know, worst franchises in the NBA. And it started at the top of the draft where, man, things were pretty chalky. It started with AJ DiBonta going to the Wizards. There was no surprise pick for the Jazz at number two. They went with Darren Peterson, the best player available and the player that I believe fit their team better than anybody else. I've been talking for months now about Cam Boozer being my favorite prospect in the NBA draft. I would have understood if they decided that they just wanted to have him in the building, but I do think with the hole at shooting guard and the top three prospects in this draft kind of being on level playing field in terms of just like a tier, if you're tiering the prospects out, I think that it made sense for them to go at shooting guard. Then Cam Boozer goes to the Grizzlies. Number four was Caleb Wilson. And I think what was probably most surprising was how, even with like less reliable sources kind of working in draft media these days, like Jonathan Givony has always been my go-to guy when trying to bet the draft and kind of use the intel that he gets from his sources. He really wasn't around this year. Like, he's doing his own individual prospect work on Instagram, on social media, but he did an appearance on the Zach Lowe show last week, and he said that he's not really, you know, reaching out to his sources every day, trying to get information anymore. He said that's part of the job that he does not miss now that he is no longer with ESPN. So we really kind of had to do it ourselves. But what I found interesting was that a lot of these prospects gave away the answers before the test. And that was absolutely huge for us. If you were following my work over at VSiN.com, if you watched the pre-draft special that we did on the VSiN network, I did nail picks 5 through 7, and that ended up really, really helping kind of my NBA draft bottom line. I ended up taking Keaton Wagler to go number 5 to the Clippers. I took Mykael Brown Jr. to go number 6 to the Brooklyn Nets, and I took Darius Acuff Jr. to go number 7 to the Sacramento Kings. And there was information available on all of that. It came directly from the players in two of those instances with, you know, Wagler pretty much confirming that the only team he was working out for was the Clippers, and he had good feedback from them, so he knew he did not have to go and work out for other teams. So that gave me, you know, the confidence to go out and make a pick with Los Angeles. And Mykael Brown Jr. just talked glowingly about his relationship with Jordy Fernandez, who is now his head coach, and Sean Marks, who is now, you know, the lead front office executive in Brooklyn. So it's just kind of hearing those things that makes you realize, all right, some of these picks know beforehand where they're going. We just have to try our best to figure out who they are. And this year it was somewhat simple with number 5 and 6. And with number 7, with Acuff, it was just a matter of like everyone in the world knew that if Acuff was available for Sacramento, that he would end up being there. And I just feel like, I don't know, I tweeted at some point last night that once I saw Acuff was on the board, I'm like, well, 1 second even come off the clock before this pick is in on the broadcast? And no, not 1 second came off as soon as number 7 was pulled off and it, you know, switched over to the Kings being on the clock. The pick was in, and I'm sure it was Vivek that made the phone call. He was probably very excited. Sacramento got a point guard. But yeah, those 7 picks, really, really easy. I wish I could say the 8th pick was easy for me, but it wasn't. I mean, Kingston Flemings ends up going to Atlanta. But the reason I would say this was chalky as well is because a lot of my VSiN colleagues, including on the primetime betting the draft show right after me when I went. I did an hour pre-draft before the draft last night on VSiN. Right after that was Tim Murray and Matt Eumanns betting the draft, doing a live show during the draft. And they nailed Kingston Flemings to go number eight. And I believe Mitch Moss had it as well. So my colleagues were all over it. I thought Ajay Mara might go at that position. But in the end, like, kind of one of the themes of the night was one through eight really went as expected. So I ended up, for as much as this draft was kind of pegged as like hard to read, we ended up reading it pretty well. The first big surprise of the night, and something that kind of like blew my mind a little bit, was number nine, the Dallas Mavericks draft Morez Johnson Jr., who is a player that I absolutely love. I have him number 12 on my personal board, and I think he's going to be a fantastic player. But I think that I did not really believe that Dusty May, who the Mavericks hired on Monday, would have a ton of say in the draft room over, you know, who he wanted to bring in. They have a general manager there in Mike Schmitz, who used to be the lead draft analyst for ESPN. That's kind of what he is known for, his ability to evaluate prospects. He had a similar front office role in the Portland Trailblazers, ended up taking the general manager job with Dallas. And I just kind of felt like he would get to make that pick. And it's possible he did. It's completely possible that he already wanted Morez Johnson Jr. at number nine and Dusty May had nothing to do with it. But it seems like a really big coincidence if May, the former Michigan coach, got a Michigan player. And it kind of wasn't the one that I think people expected to go earliest. I think most people expected Ajay Mara to be the number one Michigan player drafted, which leads me to believe that May maybe nudged them in this direction. And I really do like the fit. I just feel like putting like an absolute dog next to Cooper Flagg and potentially in between Flagg and like Derek Lively, if Lively could ever get his foot right, is going to be really interesting. Johnson is like the perfect player to bring into your organization if you're trying to make like a change and get a new culture in there. And I'm sure that had to do with, you know, Dusty's thinking here. I feel like he just turned Michigan into a championship program and he wants the guy that was kind of like the engine, the locker room leader, the like litmus test in practice. Like, I feel like he wants that guy in his locker room in the pros. And if that's the way this conversation went, I don't blame them at all. It's not like I had, you know, Morez Johnson Jr. as my number 25 prospect and he went number nine. I'm not saying they reached. I just think this was the first surprising pick. I think a lot of people, including myself, believed that it was going to be Braden Burries to go number 10. So I thought it was interesting that that's kind of where we got the first surprise. Other than that, I felt like it was a draft that really wasn't full of many surprises. And yeah, we'll talk a little bit about some of the big winners of the draft in a second. But first, I just wanted to say, while everyone is waiting for the season to start, the sharps are already getting to work. VSiN Pro gives you the advanced analytics, player prop projections, and expert insights that serious bettors rely on. And right now is the perfect time to get ahead before the season tips off. Try it for only $9.99 for your first month. Head to vsin.com/subscribe and check out all of your options. Not only are you getting all my NBA stuff, for that $9.99, you'd be getting our NFL draft, our NFL betting guide, which is fantastic. It came out on Monday. Worked really, really hard on that. Adam Burke, my managing editor over at vsin.com, does a great job with all of our guides, and this one was no different. This might have been our best one ever. Looks great. So much information in there. So many best bets. So if you're betting the NFL this season for $9.99 to get in the door, really good offer. And then also, I will say, like, there's a lot coming up. It might not seem like it. It might just seem like there's baseball season, but Wimbledon's coming up. I do a lot of tennis handicapping for the website. There's plenty, honestly, just coming kind of right down the pipeline. Summer League is honestly right around the corner. So head over to vsin.com, see what we have to offer. I think it's a great chance for you to just get your foot in the door and see what we do. I'm really proud of the work we've done over the last couple of weeks and really in my time with the company, but we've really stepped it up over these last couple of months. And I think subscribers will be very happy, especially with that offer. Running through some of the teams now that I believe kind of won the evening, there are a lot of really good, just like one by one picks, but not a lot of teams get to make multiple picks in the draft. And not a lot of teams will always nail multiple picks in the draft. There were some that I thought made questionable decisions, but the big winners to me were OKC and San Antonio. And I wrote this in the newsletter for Bill AD, who does a great job with our VSiN Daily. I said, like, one of my themes of the night was the rich getting richer. And man, like, OKC ends up drafting Ademar at number 12 and Bennett Sturts at number 16. It's hard not to love that haul for the Thunder. So Mara's a player that I had way up on my board at number 7. I think that, you know, 7'3", really strong rim protector, good rebounder, just good size, like not somebody that you could easily push around in the paint. Then offensively, he's developing a jumper. Like, I saw some pre-workout videos of him going absolutely crazy, knocking down standstill jumpers. And look, a lot of these NBA players can do that in practice, but Mara's always been a player that's kind of had some touch. He took some threes at Michigan, even though it wasn't a lot, and even though he didn't shoot them well. But I do think that the three ball is going to be part of his repertoire in the NBA. But this is just somebody that could really clog up the paint. It's somebody that they definitely took in mind thinking about how they lost last year to Victor Wembanyama, because Mara being on the floor against Wemby gives you the length you need to prevent Wemby from just dominating around the rim. So it was a major need for them to bring in another center. The future of Isaiah Hartenstein is definitely in flux in OKC. I think he'll be there this year, but we'll see. This team wanted to get a little bit bigger, though, and they got the best center in the entire draft, in my opinion. So number 12, OKC hits a home run. And then at number 16, it's a little confusing. There was a lot of trades in this area, but it was the Thunder that end up with Bennett Sturts. And Sturts is a player that throughout the draft process, I fell in love with. And that was the last pick that I gave up when I was kind of signing off from the draft show last night. I said, the only thing I'm going to add from here is Bennett Sturts to go under 17.5, because it just sounded like teams had fallen for his analytic profile, what he had done at Iowa, and what he's going to be able to do in the pros. And it sounded like he was going to go to one of the teams picking 17 earlier. Ends up being OKC. So Sturts was my number 15 on my board. So a little bit of value here, one spot of value. But no, this was the best player and best shot creator on an Iowa team that made the Elite Eight without a lot of talent last year. He scored, I believe, like 70% of his points unassisted. That just speaks to like what he is able to do as an individual shot creator. He's a very good three-point shooter. He's a very good pull-up shooter. But I think that what gets underrated when talking about Sturts is because of like maybe his perceived lack of athleticism. He's not viewed as somebody that can go to the basket and score in the paint. He had some otherworldly numbers on like two-point percentage in college. Like, this is somebody with really, really good feel in the paint. He can knock down floaters, turnaround jumpers. He has a really strong ability to finish at the rim. I think that there's some major untapped potential here. I know he's a bit older for a prospect at least, but this is somebody that like it feels a little Austin Reeves, Jalen Brunson-y in the way that he could create his own offense. So kind of wonder if he's going to be one of the steals of this draft, even at 16, where, look, he didn't go that much further than where I had him on my board, but I felt like I was actually being a little too conservative when I ranked him on my board. So I think this is a player that has the potential to be like a super sixth man for them. And maybe one day down the road, he's starting at the two guard for this team in between SGA and Jalen Williams. But I really, really like this pick. I also like when, you know, a championship contender takes guys with upside, but also players that can help immediately. I think they did that with both Mara and Sturts. So loved what OKC did. I also loved what San Antonio did. They take Jaden Quaintance at number 20 and Tarris Reed Jr. at number 26. And Quaintance is a player that, yeah, I sprinkled him to fall out of the first round based on what I was reading and hearing. And I ended up losing that. It was 0.5 units. It was whatever. We ended up winning like 0.28 units across all of my draft picks. So was really happy with the stuff that we gave out on this podcast, that we gave out on the live show. Ended up being a really profitable night for us. But Quaintance is a player that I had 16 on my board. And I noted on there that I would have had him in my top 10 pretty easily if I knew that his knee was healthy. And if he never tears his ACL at Arizona State in his freshman season before heading to Kentucky for his sophomore season, feel pretty strongly that Quaintance goes number 5 in this draft behind the top four players. So Quaynes is a player that is just like unbelievable defensively, like potential all defensive performer somewhere down the road, and otherworldly athleticism, can guard 1 through 5 in a pinch, but can really guard like 3 through 5 at a very high level. Good rebounder offensively, good like vertical rim kind of presence. Like he can be, you know, a pick and roll finisher, somebody that can attack off the bounce, really, really skilled. He's just going to have to kind of work on his jumper a little bit if he wants to kind of take his game to the next level, but it might not be necessary because of where he was drafted. When he's going to be playing with Wemby, it's going to be able to be Wemby kind of serving as like a stretch four and Quaynes being more of your traditional center. And then defensively, geez, good luck scoring on a Quaynes Wembanyama front court. Those are going to be some of the toughest minutes that any team plays all year when they go up against the Spurs, if the Spurs can get that knee right. So Quaynes said that there's another knee surgery probably coming for him in the near future to fix everything and get him right. With that in mind, I'd say, like, for as good as this draft is for San Antonio, in my opinion, don't think you're going to see Quaynes for a year. I think he's probably going to sit out most of the 2026-2027 season. But when I was kind of doing my pre-draft coverage, I noted with Quaynes, like, a really smart team is going to view this as an opportunity to get a blue chip prospect later in the draft. And the Spurs, they're the definition of a very smart team, and they land a top prospect at number 20, one with a lot of red flags, but they are in no rush with their roster to force him back into action before he's 100% ready. I think they'll play it very, very slow with him. And when you do see Quaynes on the floor for San Antonio, you'll feel better knowing that he is actually healthy. So it's a risky pick. Like, maybe the knee never gets right, but they are the team that was able to do that type of thing. Maybe OKC could have done it as well, but I liked it for San Antonio because I think a lot of people, including myself, like before the draft, thought a little bit about what a Quaynes Wembanyama front court would look like. And yeah, we're going to get it. So really, really strong pick for them. And then Tyrese Reed Jr. is just like a ready-made backup big in the NBA. For UConn, he was a monster on the glass, a guy that can give you some buckets in the post, good passer, just like does all the right things that you're looking for in like a pick-and-roll center off the bench. And this could be their backup center of the future. And it might be as early as next season because he is an older prospect. He played 4 years of college basketball, and I just really like that pick. This team clearly knew that they got bullied inside by New York in the NBA Finals. They went in to this draft with a goal of getting bigger, end up with Quaynes and Reed. So really, really good work by the Spurs front office. Moving on now to some of like my favorite fits in the draft. Like, these are just some of the fun fits that I saw. Some individual fits I really like that happened kind of later in the draft. I don't really want to talk about the top of the draft. It's a little bit boring. We've kind of talked about what all of those prospects would look like in their new spots. So I feel like doing something a little bit different and talking a little bit further. I will start with Darius Acuff Jr., who goes number 7 to Sacramento. And rather than hearing me talk about it, I have Ryan McDonough from our pre-draft show talking about why he likes Acuff.
What you want from a lead guard in the NBA today, the ability to create shots for yourself and others at a high level, the composure and feel for the game, the physical, you see the physical strength there. There's really a lot to like offensively. Teams will pick at his defense, but my colleague and friend Fran Fraschilla of SiriusXM, I thought, made a great point the other day. He said, look, people tend to overweight college defense. If a guy is smart and tough and cares, and the NBA team focuses on that end of the court, you can get a lot better in that regard. But what you can't teach is what Darius Acuff has, the feel, the scoring ability, the passing ability. So I think he has a chance to be a tremendous lead guard, which just about every team in the league could use at this point.
Ryan has made decisions in an NBA front office before. He is somebody that really knows what it takes to be a really strong pro. And hearing him talk that glowingly about a prospect, it makes you think that player is going to be special. And it's already a player that I believe is going to be special. I had him number 4 on my board. I had him above Caleb Wilson. And I just think that the situation he walked into is perfect. I know not a lot of players do not want to play for Sacramento. And the Kings have a way about like mismanaging things, which is why they're in a situation now where, despite having De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Halliburton on their teams at one point, they no longer have a point guard. But they got, in my opinion, the best pure point guard in the draft and somebody that wanted to be there. So Acuff's going to roll into Sacramento knowing he's the guy on day one, and they're going to roll the ball out to him, and it's going to be really fun to watch. Another one I liked was Yaxel Lendeborg at number 11 to Golden State. This is not like a great fit in terms of where I had Lendeborg on my board to compared to where he went. I had Lendeborg right in this range at number 13, so it's not like they got great value. But the reason I like this is because Lendeborg is an older prospect. That's really like the one knock on him. And entering the draft process, people talked about how nobody really wants a guy that's going to be 24 years old at the start of next season. But you know who does? A team that's a little bit older and trying to bridge two timelines where they want to compete while Steph Curry's there. And bringing in an older prospect satisfies the goal of bringing in somebody that can contribute right away while also bringing in somebody that could be a part of their future. And Lendeborg is perfect there. So you throw him in at the power forward position. You could play next to Draymond Green. That's a really interesting pairing because both of them are absolute like dogs on the court. Lendeborg's like, you know, supposedly a unique personality and someone that like people have been trying to get a read on, but it worked at Michigan. He won them a national championship. And in the pros, I think that he's going to be able to defend multiple spots. He's somebody that offensively can serve as a roller. He can knock down jumpers. He can drive a little bit. He can pass. I think he's going to fit perfectly in the Steve Kerr offense once he just gets up to speed and starts to feel a little bit comfortable. Another one that was kind of like confusing at the time because of all the trades, but Ibuka Okori, the Stanford guard, goes to the Pistons at number 17. That was, don't want to call it a reach. Like I had Okori number 20, but there were other players available that I thought maybe the Pistons could have gone with, like LeBaron Fallon Jr., who is next on this list for me. But I wanted the Pistons to walk out of this draft with a really good on-ball creator, and that's exactly what they got in Okori. Okori is electric with the ball in his hands, really good handle. He gets to the rim at will, even though he is a much smaller guard, and I feel like this is the exact type of player that Detroit needed to put next to Cade Cunningham. And it might not be year one where he comes in and makes the impact that the Pistons are hoping for. Might be year two, year three, maybe even year four. But Okori is a very good scorer, a good playmaker, and plays a little bit bigger than his size. So this is somebody that is going to be able to make plays for this team. The offense for Detroit was the weakness in the postseason, and it was something that we kind of harped on all season long. When they were the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, I kept saying I viewed them as the fourth best team in the Eastern Conference because didn't think the roster was where it needed to be from a shot-making perspective. They're not done yet. They need to go make a trade, but this is a step in the right direction, bringing in an offensive-minded player in this draft, and I think Okori is going to be a really good fit with J.B. Bickerstaff and this Detroit team. Filon, who I just mentioned, number 22 to Philadelphia. This was an absolute steal. I had Filon at number 11 on my board. I felt really good about him potentially going to the Bucks with either pick 10 or 13. Ends up going all the way down to 22. And look, that's a team that's loaded in the backcourt with both Tyrese Maxey and VJ Edgecombe. And they have some other players there that, you know, you don't know the future of, like a Quentin Grimes or something. But Filon was just too good of a talent to pass up on at that spot. And now you kind of have like a sixth man of the future and somebody that's going to be able to come in and just change games with his ability to score. Filon is just unstoppable going to the basket. He doesn't look like he has a ton of athleticism, but really good off the bounce. One of the best handlers in the league, in college basketball last year, and going to be one of the better handlers in the league. Like, he is somebody that can really create space for himself, gets himself to the rim. The jumper improved significantly in his time with Alabama, and he is a good playmaker. So offensively, I think he's going to be a very good sixth man for Philly for a long time. And I will say this too, there is starter potential for Filon. Like, freshman season at Alabama, he was viewed as a very good defender. Sophomore season, as he became the guy offensively, all of that kind of went away. Maybe there's a middle ground he finds in the NBA where he actually plays some strong defense while being a great offensive player. So there is a chance he ends up being a starter in the future. It would be tough just because Maxey, Edgecombe, Filon, you're talking about a really undersized, you know, backcourt. And if you're playing one of them at the three, like, it's going to be very difficult. But at the very worst, you bring in somebody that I actually compared to Peyton Pritchard when I wrote him up in like a pre-draft profile for Real GM. Maybe you have your Peyton Pritchard in Philly, and this team just needed more reliable scorers. Like, we saw against the Knicks in the postseason, the starters were fine. The Knicks bench absolutely killed their bench in a playoff setting. So Philly now has somebody to come off the bench and really kind of make bench units a lot stronger. The last one that I'll hit on before I kind of get into some of the NBA offseason stuff. I thought, like, I usually talk about this stuff from like the perspective of like good players going to good teams, like with systems that could help them. In this case, with Cameron Carr going to the Lakers, it's a good player going to a team that has a player that is the system in Luka Doncic. So to borrow from James Harden, when he said, "I am the system," Luka is the system in LA. And Carr is a player that, like, 6'4" and a half, or, you know, 6'5", you want to round up, really good 3-point shooter, crazy length that he can use defensively, and outrageous athleticism. I think a lot of people viewed him as very raw, and there's just no kind of telling how polished he'll be towards the end of his NBA career and what his career will look like. But man, like, if you're trying to pick out a dream scenario for Carr, getting to play off of Luka is going to do nothing but create perfect looks for you from deep, opportunities for you to roll to the rim and finish as a, you know, lob threat, play in transition, all of that. Like, Carr is a player that needs the game simplified for him. Luka is going to simplify it for him pretty much single-handedly. So I thought the Lakers hit like a home run at number 24, drafting Carr, who I had at number 19 on my board, but I had him as a player that, like, can easily make that ranking look stupid. I mean, this is a player that is a really good bet to be a great 3-and-D prospect or 3-and-D player in the NBA, and has way more athleticism than that, so might end up being a little bit more. I mean, the college career was a little bit weird. Final season at Baylor, though, very good. And this was the talk of the NBA Combine, how long Carr was, how athletic Carr was, and how well Carr played in some of the scrimmages. So that's really where I want to go with the draft. I will talk about Rookie of the Year the next time you hear me on this podcast, which we're going to do either next week or maybe before, if there's like an emergency trade again, like we have with the Giannis Antetokounmpo trade. As soon as Giannis was traded to Miami, I jumped on with my producer, Matt, and we did a 12-minute show on the Hardwood Handicappers channel, Hardwood Handicappers, one word, and we also did podcast, Spotify, Apple, all that. But when there is going to be breaking news, we will do shows on quicker notice and jump on things as they come in. I don't know what that will look like next. Free agency starts soon, but like, maybe the next domino to fall is Jaylen Brown being traded away from Boston. But pretty much just saying that we will have a show next week no matter what, and there's a chance that it'll be sooner. And the next time we have a show, I will talk a little bit more about Rookie of the Year. But I did want to just kind of end this show talking a little bit about some of the moves we've seen in the NBA over the last like week or so, because I did the whole show on Giannis, but I did not talk about some of the smaller moves we saw. So let's talk a little bit about them. First, Mike Anunoby is hired by the Portland Trailblazers. Don't have a lot to say on this outside of that I really love Nori as a coach. I think he's going to do a really good job. Like, he's a very good personality. Also, you know, a very sharp X's and O's thinker. This is somebody that has been late in the hiring cycle for multiple jobs and just hasn't gotten opportunity. And unfortunately, that's why he ended up having to take the job in Portland that I think he's better than. I feel bad talking about this. And I think I feel like I saw Chris Finch saying that people shouldn't be ripping the deal or anything, but Nori signed a 1-year deal with the Blazers with 2 team options. So do a good job, you're back on a cheap deal. You have no way out. Do a bad job, you're out. 1 year to prove yourself. I don't like that type of deal. I really don't like the Portland owner. It's just like, it's obnoxious to come into the league as, I know, a successful owner of an NHL franchise, an NHL franchise that just won the Stanley Cup. He's the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes. Things have worked out very well for him over there, but it's a different league, and nobody agrees with the way that he's going about his business in Portland, whether that's getting rid of hotel rooms for assistants on road trips, taking away the T-shirts and playoff games from the fans. He is cutting costs at every corner. And the word on this head coaching job, which is why nobody wanted it, is that he wanted to pay his next head coach more like a college head coach or more like a top level assistant in the NBA. He did not want to pay market value or league average value for a head coach. And I just hope that Nori ended up getting a decent deal in the end, but I don't like that he's under, to quote Moneyball, the cloud of a 1 year contract, just right from the start. Like, it's just not a way to show your new head coach that you have a lot of faith in them, and wish that this was not the case for Nori, but I do think he'll do a good job. I think he's a good coach. That team has a lot of talent. I just wish he landed in a better situation for him personally. And I do think that the owner is going to be a problem, not just for coaches and front office executives, for players too. I think that if he's going to be hands-on with his front office and tell them he's not looking to go into the luxury tax, he's not willing to pay top dollar for top stars. Like, if you're a player like Denny Avdia, are you just like, do you want out already? Like, I would want out after hearing all this stuff. So it's just me really ranting about how much I dislike the way that owner is going about his business. Maybe he's a good guy. I don't want to say he's a bad person personally, but so far, don't like the way he's going about his ownership of the Portland Trail Blazers. Other moves. There was a kind of smaller trade that the Thunder sent Aaron Wiggins to the Atlanta Hawks for 2 second round picks. It was kind of a salary dumping move for OKC. It really said nothing about the way they view Wiggins. But Wiggins, I like as a pickup for the Hawks. So I just quickly say that. I think he is a player that can be a solid kind of 3-and-D wing for them and can give them minutes off the bench that he was not going to be able to give to the Thunder because the Thunder are just completely loaded. So just wanted to say that quickly because it felt like a throwaway trade when looking at all the deals coming through on like Shams's Twitter over the last couple of days, but does make the Hawks a little bit better. Does it make the Hawks a championship contender? Does it change their betting odds? No, but getting Aaron Wiggins makes them a better team than they were without Aaron Wiggins. We also had a Trae Young extension. 4 years, I believe it was $212 million. This was a very polarizing deal. I think a lot of people felt like Young did not deserve that payday. What I will say about it is I still think this is a really good player. I still think he's a top 25 to 30 player in the NBA, and I think he's going to be very motivated. And also, if he got a deal with the Wizards for 4 years, $212 million, it wasn't a situation of, oh, they were bidding against no one. Why would they pay that? There was clearly another suitor or two out there willing to bring him in the ballpark of $40 to $45 million, which made the Wizards have to go up to 50-plus. Like, that's common sense. And Young is a player that I think it's going to help all of their young guys a lot. Sure, he has his deficiencies, like shot selection's not great at times. Defense is terrible at all times. But in terms of actual playmaking, like one of one at the point guard position, this is a guy that can go into that situation in Washington next year, average right around 10 assists, get easy shots for these young players, and just kind of get them playing better basketball on the offensive end of the floor, which is something that they need to do. So I thought that I had no problem with them bringing Young back, even if it was a little bloated of a contract. I think it'll be fine. And I think that it'll be fine in the scheme of like the long term where you're trying to maybe bring back Alex Sarr in a bigger deal or something. I think it will be okay. I think Young comes into this season with a chip on his shoulder and kind of shows everyone that he is still a high level player. So I didn't have a problem with it. I know a lot of people did. I think Washington's going to be good next year. I think they're going to be a playoff team right away. I think Dibonsa brings that type of shot-making at the three, shot-making that they kind of already had in Will Riley last year. I think this team is kind of deep with explosive scorers, and if they could bring Anthony Davis back without, you know, him demanding a trade before ever even stepping foot on the floor for the Wizards, I think that they're going to be really good. I love Ausar-Davis combination at the 4-5. So like what Washington's doing, to be honest. The last trade, I kind of joked about it before I got into the Giannis Antetokounmpo stuff on my last podcast, but it was pretty big trade. Julius Randle traded from the Minnesota Timberwolves to the Brooklyn Nets. The Nets in that deal moved Nick Claxton to the Chicago Bulls. And there were some picks that moved, but nothing major. This was really a salary dump from Minnesota. The Bulls got Nick Claxton for free. And just kind of a win-win-win trade, in my opinion, because Minnesota, they wanted to clear up cap space to re-sign Io Desumu. They did to a five-year deal for, I want to say it was $110 million, and I really liked that deal for them. 5 years, $112 million. Io was great for the Timberwolves, and I think that they believe he has more upside, and just putting him next to Ant as the starter next year is probably their priority. So you go into next season with Io, Ant, McDaniels in a bigger role, Naz Reid starting for the first time and in a much bigger role, and Rudy Gobert. Starting five is still really strong, and you know there's been some articles from Minnesota, you know, maybe trying to turn this into like puff pieces or whatever, but Minnesota said that they think it's going to be addition by subtraction with Randle, where McDaniels and Reid will make up for his production with their increased reps and shot attempts. So maybe that's true. I think Randle's a good player. I do actually agree, though, that like that front court was just too crowded. And I think that Naz Reid should be starting for Minnesota. So them getting him off the books, it was fine to me. I didn't have a problem with it. But I do like Randle in Brooklyn. Like, I feel like you're getting an in his prime all-star caliber power forward that can help you win games immediately this year and just kind of make the organization a little bit more serious. I always liked that. You got him for Claxton, who you really didn't want anymore. I think that the Nets are going to be fun next season. I think Mykal Brown Jr., Yegor Joman, Michael Porter Jr., Julius Randle, De'Ron Sharp, like, that's an interesting starting five. And you have one of the best coaches in the NBA in Jordy Fernandez. I tweeted right after they got Randle. Fernandez was, like, born to turn that Randle contract into, like, an even contract again and an asset that maybe another team would be willing to trade for next offseason and give something up for it. I just think Randle's going to be really good in Brooklyn. And I feel like with the new lottery rules, there's no advantage to just being absolutely terrible. So if you're the Nets, why not just absorb his contract, bring in an all-star, put him next to MPJ and Sharp, and all of a sudden you have a front line of Porter, Randle, Sharp, where that's going to be a tough team on the glass. And if Brown is better than expected in year one and Joman's a little bit better in year two, you have some firepower in the backcourt. Like, I think that this Nets team, they're going to be a fun league pass team next year, and they're going to win some more games than people think. So I didn't have a problem with them getting Randle in Chicago. You just took Claxton into your cap space, essentially. And that is a good thing if you're getting the Claxton from like 2-3 years ago, a bad thing if you're getting the Claxton of the last year or two. Claxton used to be a really good rim protector, really good rim runner. He's somebody that plays a lot of games, doesn't get injured very often. I'll knock on wood for him. But I think that's somebody that like they needed an anchor defensively, and maybe they believe that he could get back to playing high level defense, but they didn't give anything up besides, I believe it was Mo Gee or one of the Mo Gees. There's two of them in the NBA, so very complicated, but traded one of them for Claxton. They didn't have to give up anything of value, and they got a starting center, a borderline starting center, but at least for them, a starting center. So I like this trade for all three teams. I know that it was a trade that was kind of laughed at by a lot of people. Nobody really wanted it. Like, when people are in their mode of waiting for Giannis trades, no one wants to see the Julius Randle trade kind of creep through. But I did want to talk about it a little because the Nets are a team that I think at the right price next year, we might be looking at it over on their win total. So I thought I was excited about what we saw from Brooklyn in that deal. But that's really all I have for you for today. And unfortunately, no picks at the moment. But like I said, I am going to start thinking about Rookie of the Year now that the draft is kind of in the rearview mirror. We do have second round action of the NBA draft tonight. There are some good players left, but no betting on that for me. I'm going to turn my attention now to post-draft analysis, post-draft picks, and you can get all of that over at vsin.com. You can get all of that on this Hardwood Handicappers podcast. So make sure you are subscribed to whatever, but definitely the YouTube channel we're trying to grow, Hardwood Handicappers, all one word, or Spotify, Apple, but however you are listening, we appreciate it. And hopefully you guys enjoyed the live show that I did last night. It was my first time going live and hosting. Been on the shows a million times, but being on that side of the screen was new to me, and actually hosting a show for an hour live was new. So it was a fun experience. I really enjoyed doing it. Hopefully I get to do it again. But yeah, I hope you guys that tuned in did enjoy what I had for you on that show. But before I get you out of here, I do want to say attention to any listeners who are new to VSiN. Signing up for our free daily newsletter is a great way to catch up. Delivered straight to your inbox every morning, VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, and strategies for the day's betting menu. Sign up for free now at vsin.com/newsletter and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That's vsin.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN.